Hi, I'm Richard Burnaby, and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Lens, where I speak with inspiring people from all over the world about photography, the arts, travel, conservation, entrepreneurship, and creative culture. Before I get to my amazing guest, I want to point out that this is episode 57, and there's nothing all that monumental or special about the 57th episode, aside from the fact that I really thought that this would probably go no more than 10 or 12 before it collapsed into a dumpster fire of mediocrity. And I'm not saying that it's not that, what I just said, but I just thought we'd never make it this far. And that's nice, because here we are. And this 57th episode marks the two-year anniversary of episode number one. This little thing, this podcast, has been chugging along for 2 years. So what better time to show some gratitude? First, to my listeners, I know this is cliche, but I'm going to say it anyway. Couldn't have done it without you, obviously. Thanks for following along, even in the early days when my on-air mannerisms and questions were super cringeworthy. Thank you all for listening, and keep on listening. Thanks to all who have contributed to the production of the podcast. Thanks to the many guests and my sponsors as well. I am very grateful. And now on to my guest, John Stanmeyer. John's an award-winning photographer, filmmaker, and educator dedicated to social, humanitarian, and political issues that define our times. For more than 20 years, John's worked nearly exclusively with National Geographic magazine, producing over 18 stories, resulting in more than 14 covers. 14 covers of National Geographic magazine. Between 1998 and 2008, John was a contract photographer for Time magazine, and his years with Time resulted in 18 covers and more than 100 stories. He's a recipient of numerous honors, including the prestigious Robert Capa Award, Magazine Photographer of the Year, and World Press Photo of the Year. His website is stanmeyer.com. That's S-T-A-N-M-E-Y-E-R, stanmeyer.com. Instagram at John Stanmeyer. Please do check him out. We will get to our interesting, really interesting conversation right after this short message from one of our partners. This episode is brought to you by Luminar Neo. Friends, let me tell you about this incredibly powerful photo editor that I love called Luminar Neo. Powered by AI technologies, Luminar Neo streamlines the editing process and provides everything you could possibly need to get photos that will look amazing on the screen and in print. Luminar Neo was designed for both hobbyists and pros and includes cutting-edge editing tools all in one intuitive and easy-to-use app. It uses generative AI to intelligently analyze your photos and erase distracting elements in your compositions, add realistic objects that seamlessly blend into the background, or expand the frame in any direction. If that's your thing, of course. If not, it's still one of the most powerful photo editors when keeping your images natural and realistic as well. How you use it is totally up to you. Luminar Neo has all the features you need to enhance your images with precision and ease, and again, I can't stress enough how incredibly easy it is to use and how powerful this editor is. You can use Luminar Neo as a standalone app on your PC or Mac computer, or if you're like me, as a plugin for Adobe Lightroom or Photoshop, so you can keep your existing workflow. Learn more about Luminar Neo and how it can amplify your creative vision for your photos by visiting skylum.com. That's skylum.com. Hey, John, welcome to the podcast. Really excited to have you on today.
Thank you.
Quite welcome. I'd love to start by having you share a little bit about yourself, who you are, talk about your work, your accomplishments, career highlights. It's a chance to tell your story and brag on yourself a little.
I don't know how to do that.
Oh, yes, you do.
No, I actually don't. I don't find myself that interesting.
Well, I do.
I'm John. I'm not to dissuade or navigate around your question. It's not really for me to say. I'm just another temporary human being on this planet. And I don't ponder about myself at all.
You have a list of awards and accomplishments a mile long.
I presume so. There's much more that I'm here to do, and every day is really a whole new awakening and a whole new possibility. I don't look at the past to reference anything. So when you say, and it's very kind of you that I'm successful at what I do or what have you, it reminds me that I have so much more giving and work that I have to do, because we're seeing the same madness and human absurdity over and over.
So I can see you're a little uncomfortable talking about yourself, which is okay. You're very modest, but I want to go back a ways to where you got your start. You began as a fashion photographer?
In a past life, and it really, really was a past life. I was in the art fashion world in Europe, and it was a very intriguing, magical time. Like every moment, though, is it was limitlessly creative, but it was too self-focused. Anything that the mind wanted to manifest or think or create could be created, and that was beautiful. But everyone's different. It became quite self-destructive. And needed to go through that period of existence, I guess, to realize why I'm here. And
would you consider that experience a failure?
Oh, no, 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 no. It was enlightenment. Nothing's a failure. It was incredibly expansive. It was very much... again, an evolutionary aspect of this life that expanded awareness in multiple levels, definitely in creating and seeing ideas.
I see.
And feeling, it became too simple, and I don't see that as a failure.
I often ask my guests about their quote-unquote favorite failure. That's an apparent failure, or what felt like a failure at the time, but later on set them up for bigger and better successes and more fulfilling experiences later on. Would this qualify? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess, okay, we'll call it a failure. Failure I understand the word. I guess everything you could say, everything is a failure because we have so much work to do. I'm photographing the same madness I've been now witnessing for nearly 30 years. I'll only use self. I failed. We have so much more work to do. And in the act of visual communication, we obviously are not doing enough.
Your name and your work are almost synonymous with National Geographic. How long have you been working with them?
About 20 years now.
And what would you say is the biggest lesson you've learned while working there?
Ooh, the biggest lesson I've learned... the mantra of the most talented editor, brilliant photographer, loveliest human being, Sarah Lean, who was also the first female director of photography at National Geographic, I remember doing my first story with her, and I didn't really like some of these overall views of the narrative related to global aid around the world. And we were in the midway editing of the story. You do it in two chapters, like, you know, first immersion and the story, come to DC and edit and then go back out. And I said, Sarah, you know, I don't really like it. It's too simple. And she said, we need something like this. We need this, Stan Meyer. Geography is in the name of the magazine. a sense of place. And that sense of place and that vibration of brilliance from Sarah when she said, geography is in the name of the magazine. And this really holds true in every publication, anything we do. Really, music is a landscape. I use music as metaphors for myself all the time. Music is a landscape as well. And in photography, I definitely expanded on that awareness, and I hold it every day, even when I'm looking out the window here, to looking through the limited view of what a camera is, to always give a sense of the enormity and the beauty and the reality and the heaviness of where we are and who we are. And all of that is a sense of place.
Have you ever turned down a story or an assignment?
Oh, many times.
For what reason?
Either I didn't know enough of the topic to be able to give to it. Mostly that. I kind of think if I just maybe there'd be a scheduling conflict that I couldn't do, but it would mostly connect to turning down on a project when I really felt that others had a deeper well of wisdom to it than I had. I can't recall. You're probably going to ask me next, what that may be. I can't recall, but when it happens next, I'll let you know.
In preparation for a story or an assignment, can you research too much?
Yes. Boy, that's a beautiful reality. The greatest power in anything is the power of I do not know. And the more you know, and there's nothing wrong in knowing something, and of course I research every story, but I reach a point, and I think we should all consider reaching a point, where we don't become over academic with it. Because then, let's say, so you're going to do a story of trees, let's say. Of course, and you'll need to know the species of the trees to a certain extent. And it depends again on the narrative of the story on trees, let's say. So take this example maybe a little bit more loosely, but more as a metaphor to everything. And I'll turn it another, I'll stretch it even further here because I'm looking out in the backyard at trees. My neighbor, dearest kind neighbor, Haridas, knows every tree, and will be in the backyard, and he'll say, oh boy, that, you know, maple tree over there, I'll be like, Das, don't tell me its name. And you know, oh, that Japanese maple. I'm like, no, that's the dreaming tree. and the other, another tree whose name, thankfully, I don't remember. Is the magic tree. If I only knew the magic tree as whatever tree it is, let's pretend it's an oak because I really don't know what the magic tree genus is, I'll only see it as the oak tree. It'll no longer be the magic tree. And when we see and feel, really feeling the magic of everything around us, we no longer are categorizing it. So do your research, and get to know, of course, as much as possible but leave a vastness of I do not know, because it's in that space of the I do not know that you discover all of these incredible unknown things like a child.
Right, like a child. That child's mind, or the beginner's mind, or power of I don't know, as you call it, do you use that in your approach to photography?
I would think on everything, yes, even in life. Everything is so vast. We know really nothing of anything. We understand the tree and why it grows, or the stars and the massiveness of the 2 trillion discernible universes, of which there's 200 to 300 billion planets in each of them. But we know really very little of nothing. We don't even understand completely the atom and molecules that make up our physical existence, let alone of every existent around us. And of course, that drives us to learn more. But it's in that wonderment of not knowing that you open yourself up into this incredible vastness of curiosity and yes, childlike. But our trouble with how we are as humans is we foolishly grow up, and it makes no sense. You can't help but grow up on the outside. We all have to return to the earth and give these things we're contained in back. But don't ever let your mind feel like you know everything, because you are going to miss the greatest element of expansion in life and in this discussion. I guess we're talking about photography, in how to expand in feeling and seeing everything around you.
I have a few quotes of yours that I'd like to read and have you respond or explain or expound on, if you like, if you're game.
Mm-hmm.
First one, photography really isn't that interesting. It's life that's interesting.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Interesting you even found that. Yeah, photography is really just an extension or an orbital piece of this thing called life. It's a vessel. The camera is just, you know, a tool, and often the best way to equate this vessel or the tool is like a soup pot and a soup spoon. The flavors and the giving that you give to that pot, in this case, let's say the camera, and the soup spoon, let's say the lens, that you go and you create and manifest the most incredible soup or whatever you wish to create, in a way that we've never tasted before, in a way that we've, in this case, never seen before. That has nothing to do with being a cook, so to speak, or a chef, or a photographer. That's just the act of, it is the expression that is flowing through you, that is not you. It's really almost another state of awareness. When we talk about photography, and so that just becomes sort of the outgoing expression, which is why the act of photography is pretty simple. It's much more fascinating out of life.
Okay, next one. Quote, I am not looking to attract people's attention. My goal is to tap their consciousness.
Well, absolutely. Again, it's sort of as if, well, I kind of know that one. What else is there, Richard, in this life? Attention getting has always been there. It's more amplified today because we have so many ways to communicate, and that's a beautiful thing. So getting people's attention, we're almost overwhelmed with getting attention now, and that's fine too. It's always been that way. We always like to say everything is more problematic today than it was. In reality, it's the same as it ever was. But It is really about raising consciousness, and that's the only way I've known and felt that our species, which is the most dominant one on this planet, can ease on doing the egregious acts that it does, because it's only the weakness of our consciousness, or the lack of consciousness, that perpetuates the problems that we see repeating over and over and over. And it really connects to really a brilliant philosopher and a spiritualist named Eckhart Tolle, who very well explains and expresses about the egoic mind, which is really what drives many political leaders and all of us. It's not about ego. I think I'm great, or look at me, and aren't I dressed well, or is my hair great? That's frivolous ego. That's even the silliest of egos. It's the egoic mind of domination, of convincing oneself without facts, without any consciousness other than one's own convincing, to literally kill another human being, and I'm using the most heinous form of it, or doing egregious destruction to our Earth, which the Earth, you know, kind of laughs at, and Earth doesn't need us. It'll heal itself with all the stupidity that we do to it, but the Earth will be thrilled when we're not here anymore. It'll just laugh, and it'll continue on doing its magical thing. It still comes down to this incredible moment of our collective existence in regards to, we'll return it to photography, the importance of going beyond self, beyond just composition, beyond layers, beyond this is important, into the aspect of feeling and seeing and understanding the magnitude that is before us and within us, to express stories that tap consciousness and raise awareness.
The images we make are not about us. They don't belong to us.
Correct.
You want to comment any further than that? Of course, it's correct.
Well, what more is there to comment? I mean, I'm not trying to drop away.
When you say they
question,
don't belong to us, do they belong to anyone at all?
They belong to all of us. They belong to all of us because it is the mirror looking at ourselves. Nothing belongs to us, because even this lamp next to me, or the computer screen that I'm looking at here, really doesn't belong to me. You and I are temporary. We die, and that's perfectly fine. So all these things, computer screen, photography, it's a record of our history of our photography when we're dealing in the art of indisputable reality. But it is a record, or a library, or an archive, or a testimony, just like petroglyphs that you'll see carved, you know, already going back, you know, 20,000-30,000 years in southern France and in Spain, to the southwest, and, you know, parts of the Middle East. They didn't belong to those who created it. They belong to all of us. It's a record of that time. So everything is temporary, but things that have the ability to last become a testimony of our existence, and they do not belong to us. They belong to all of us.
Beyond photography, or even beyond visual arts, because I know you do cinematography as well, what skill do you possess that has helped you the most in your career and your work?
I don't know, Richard, if I possess anything other than...
I think you're being over the top modest now.
No, because if I were to say I possess something or have something, that means the cup is full. And the cup is full, right? It is more than half full. But there's so much more to do, so much more that can be done. So what is it that I possess, or any one of us possesses? You possess the beauty of giving to this wonderful podcast and talking to fellow human beings to raise awareness and expand even human consciousness. So we all possess the ability to do. So if there's anything that, but it's universal with all of us, is the ability to do. When you wake up in the morning, be absolutely astonished, because more than 250,000 other fellow human beings on our planet didn't wake up today. It's just a reality. So you're alive. What's your problem? None.
I have no problem waking up in the mornings. I love waking up in the mornings alive. I'm grateful. But getting back to the original question, you must have some skill sets, some complementary skill sets, in addition to working with a camera. You work with people, you work with cultures. Maybe it's a facility with language. Maybe it's social skills or empathy.
That's your opinion.
Yeah, but I want your opinion.
I can't answer that. If you're feeling something in the images, then I did my job. But I look at them and I go, okay, for that moment, which is in the past, it feels all right. I need to go even further because I need to be more conscious. And in that act of sort of self greater discovery, I'm hoping that we can all elevate our awareness on really even the most simplest things in life to sometimes the most complex ones. So does that have to do with being able to talk to another human being or find empathy in somebody else's situation or a myriad of other things? I guess so, but I think everybody has all of that. Whether we choose to give to that and let it flow through us is a whole other thing, and that becomes personal. We can't determine that from anyone. You're very kind to say what you're saying. I'm not trying to be modest. I'm trying to be real.
So you are behind the camera and you're just not feeling it. It's derivative. It's of something else you've already done or something you've seen. It's been done by others. It's just not working. What do you do, or what do you do to reset?
I put down the camera. Happens all the time. Richard, happens all the time. As soon as I see a moment that is similar to what I've seen, or if I have a slideshow in the mind of images or moments that others have created, I put the camera down and realize there has to be something more, because I'm only seeing the manifested. That which is already there and that which I already know. And if there's anything I hope to be able to give to others that are taking their incredibleness called clock time to listen to this, find who you are and find that through you. And it maybe is a different way for everyone, but I just put the camera down and I basically go silent. I may just sit somewhere. I may look around. I really don't know, because I'd have to be in that particular situation to explain what it is. Other than putting the camera down, and in that quietness of not thinking, then most often something manifests, something that beyond just the manifested or that which is manifested already, you begin to see other dimensions of it, other layers of it, not just even that are in front of you that are visible, but sometimes the invisible. That only comes by removing yourself and removing your memory, whether it's the memory of other people's work or the memory of your own past way of seeing, to almost, again, become more expansive. It happens all the time, and maybe even more amplified and more repetitive in the recent years.
We'll be right back to the show after this short message. This episode is brought to you by Case Filters. Look, I travel the world with my camera, and I can use any photography filter I like. And trust me, I've tried them all. But I only trust my photos to Case Filters. That's Case with a K, K-A-S-E. Why? Well, they're made with premium materials, HD optical glass, shockproof, no color cast, unlike some filters I've used in the past, round and square filter designs, magnetic systems, filter holders, adapters, step-up rings, everything I need so I never miss a moment. And now my listeners can get 10% off the Case Filters Amazon page when they visit beyondthelens.fm/case and use coupon code Burnaby10. Check it out. beyondthelens.fm/case. Use Burnaby10 at checkout for 10% off your Case Filters Amazon order. Case Filters, capture with confidence. You visit Instagram and you see thousands and thousands of photographs. Many of them are visually stunning. Technically, they check all the boxes, composition, lighting, everything. But in the end, they're nothing more than pretty pictures. So through your eyes and the way you see photographs, what do you see as missing from most of these images?
I really liked how you think, or at least your awareness and observation too. I'm bored with photography.
Please explain.
I'm bored with the photography that I'm creating, hence trying to express the going into a much more deeper state of awareness and consciousness to see beyond what I've already seen before. And I'm bored by almost all photography that I'm seeing today that isn't to be negating the importance of so many of us, all of us out there breaking rocks for the need and desperate need to tell the stories that are happening to our collective humanity. I'm sharing this to lift energy and presence to all of us in the need to go to a deeper state of awareness so that we are not just photographing what we've seen over and over and over. We, again, can compose, you know, wonderfully, and everyone can. They always have. We just didn't have the ability to see it in the sort of much more accessible way that we see photography, music, everything else. But we are, again, in this state, and I feel it from many of my friends and colleagues, that we are at a point of a new awakening, to a greater awareness so that we can expand in feeling and seeing to tell the stories that belong to all of us in order to raise awareness, consciousness, so that we no longer can so easily repeat the mistakes of our collective humanity. And in the art of indisputable reality, that is now needed more than ever. And the essence of being bored with the work that I'm doing is to, yes, torment myself in a balanced, meditative way to see beyond anything I've ever felt and seen before, to see and understand the space between, to feel and give to the unmanifested that is there, but the mind or the eye is too caught up in internal dialogue or too caught up in the one object that's right in front of us to be able to see the vastness that is there, but we're too blind to see it. And that usually is created by over internal thinking. And we are collectively at a state of our global awareness to go and consciousness to go into a deeper state of awareness. And in the act of photography, or the giving through photography, there is an awakening that I hope is really going to continue and expand so that we can become more expansive as a human society, as a global society, on the only place we can live, and that's this earth. And that is only going to come by us going beyond the beautiful imagery and the way that we're layering heavy social issues to go into an even deeper state of awareness to see things that we've never seen before, even though we've seen them repeatedly.
Do you feel tormented or tortured?
It's a self-torture that I do to myself. Not an inflicting torture, but it is again putting down the camera is a I don't know if the right word connects to that for torture. Maybe the word isn't torture, but it's the torment that I catch myself in, and it is a bit of a torment because I can accept the obvious and make it fine and easily be printed, published in magazines, books, newspapers, whatever, gallery prints. But I know there's more. And I think all of us know there's more when we see and remove Instagram and everything else, just the massive amount of information that we've always had accessibility to. I was in a Barnes & Noble bookstore a couple of weeks ago, and I was astonished by still how many rows and aisles of magazines there are. I thought it was actually quite beautiful, but I also realized that their time, clock time, might be diminishing, even more rapidly. But we've always had a tremendous amount of visual information since the dawn of a really powerful, beautiful printing press. And so I think there's been probably stages of visual awareness raising that has always evolved. And we are very much at that point again, and maybe again more amplified, because we are at least conscious, I hope, that what we're witnessing is repeating in regards to the egregious acts that we do to ourselves and to our planet. We are obviously not doing enough. And that isn't about composing more beautiful pictures of environmental degradation or war and conflict and making it even more poetically painful to look at. There is another way to take it even further. What that is, I can't just tell you. It has to come through the individual. And that's what I mean, that I can feel that there is a consciousness awakening again. And photography and music and cooking and everything in life is going to be affected by it, but it is requiring us to go deeply within ourselves.
So if I'm reading you correctly, going back to the original question, what you see is a certain superficiality in those photos.
No, I wouldn't use that word. It's somebody who's manifested and created a way to play the cello. And they've played it brilliantly, and they're constantly playing the cello the same way.
I see.
Let me give you an example of cooking. And this one is I love Indian cuisine, and I hope you and others do too. Mm-hmm. If you're in Punjab region of Northwest India, you'll find tens of thousands of paneer butter masala makers. Delicious paneer butter masala. And yet, once in a while, you will find one place that you visit where it is the most unbelievably astonishing, giving, new experience of paneer butter masala that you've ever had. What makes that human, woman or man's paneer butter masala, that much more magical than another of the tens of thousands of other paneer butter masala makers?
Well, isn't that what we're trying to pin down? That magic?
Well, you're not going to pin it because it's a manifestation that paneer butter masala created through them and experienced by giving to that soup pot, the camera lens, we'll go back to the camera, and the ladle soup spoon, the lens, to give in a new way of experiencing and expanding paneer butter marsala. You see that also, I've been to India many times, and it really is almost like a second home. But once I did a story across all of northern India, and I visited chai shops constantly. That was the meditation spot along the route for 2 months, probably 50, 60, 70 chai shops. And it's the same thing like with paneer butter marsala. There's chai, and then there's mystical, magical chai. And why is that one chai that much more mystical, magical? The vessel, the chai pot, the chai cup, is what's the importance of that cup? It's not the cup, it's the empty space. The empty space is what fills the liquid. The empty space in photography is not the manifested tree or the wall or the building or the person in front of it. It is the empty space. And in that empty space of the chai cup, or the empty space that makes up the room is not the walls. The walls just define the room. The room is the space, and the empty space, or the alleged empty space, and the filling of that chai, that giving of the chai by that chai master, manifested that which had never been experienced before. And that of feeling and seeing in the empty space, or the space of the room, or the space of the yard or the landscape, is to feel the unmanifested, to present it in a way of experiencing things that we never tasted in chai or in paneer butter marsala, or in the unmanifested that is manifested before us, if only we can feel it to see it. And that's where photography, paneer butter marsala, chai, ethical banking, cooking, music, medical science, astronomy, it takes us to another level of consciousness when we go beyond, back to your question of Instagram pictures or photography just in general. We know how to make great paneer butter marsala. We know how to make great chai. I am waiting, and I think all of us have this ability, to manifest the next awakening, the next conscious awareness of how to see the world in the same way as a certain chai will experience chai in a whole new state of awareness. So in the act of photography, that we raise our collective humanity in another level of consciousness for the betterment of humanity. And that can be done through this act called photography.
Okay, since you mentioned India, let's stay there for a moment. You made a trip to Calcutta 25 years ago or so to photograph Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. Was this a paid assignment or a self-financed self-assignment? Why did you go?
Oh, I actually funded that, Richard, with coins. Completely self-funded. I went there by just reaching out both to His Holiness the Dalai Lama and the Missionaries of Charity office in Kolkata. I just felt they were both two really incredible human beings, functioning at a very high level of awareness. And I wanted to understand who they were, and just to, not to meet them, because I want to meet somebody well known, that didn't really interest me. I was more interested in their thinking and what they do in this life. And both agreed, very kind. I worked at a newspaper at the time. And then we ran a cover story, double page, you know, inside, center, all in color, and then a fourth page in black and white, both on His Holiness and Mother Teresa.
You photographed Mother Teresa in this very candid moment. She may have been praying or meditating. Mm-hmm. And then you spoke to her and she gave you some advice on what to do and where to go. Can you share that story?
Yes. So, I guess I still am a little bit naive and everything because I'm just curious and excited about everything. But I was younger, and I remember, talking to Mother Teresa saying, you know, really, would love to show what you're, you know, what you're doing. And, as if I was going to be, you know, the beacon light or the oracle of some, you know, unknown manifestation of Mother Teresa. And rightfully so, she kind of laughed and giggled, saying, everybody knows what I do. And she didn't say it with a, you know, any sense of arrogance or anything. And she said, but you should go to the home for the dying. And I'm okay. And I went with my then former partner and another friend of mine. And we knocked on the door, you know, at the missionaries, the home for the dying, which is a few kilometers away. And this very kind, but very intense, woman opened the door and kind of a wooden door with creaky hinges. And she said, yes. And I said, oh, Mother Teresa told us to come here. She told us to go and, you know, to spend time here at the home for the dying. I'm a photographer. You know, I'm in my mid-20s, late-20s, maybe early 30s. And she looked at us. And I'm pretty sure we were kind. I don't remember, like, being boisterous or, you know, demanding or anything. But I was felt like Mother Teresa told us to come here. And she opens the door. She said, get in here. And stood there. She says, how do you really know what you're going to do here? Put your cameras down and get to work. And for the next two hours, I picked lice out of people's hair and bathed them, fellow human beings who were dying. And at that moment, I understood what she was telling us to do. How do you know what it is to be here? And from that day, every story I do that has anything to do with labor, anything that I can have, you know, if I'm in covering in a trauma center with doctors. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to, you know, try to stitch anybody up or anything like that. I don't know how to medically advise to that level. But put your cameras down, put your pens down, put your instrument down, put yourself, your ego, anything about you, put it down and pick up that bag of 50 kg of rice because 10 other men are sitting there touting these 50 kg sacks of rice to feed people and carry that rice. Go bathe somebody who is in need of being bathed. Go do laundry by hand against a rock in a river. Go sweep the halls of a home or a clinic to fully understand what it is that you're there for and how you can even contribute as another human being, as just being a pipe, a vessel of expressing the enormity of the most simplest things in life, let alone the most unbelievable, overwhelming, pressing needs of all people. So that moment with that nun was one of these many you know, conscious awakening moments. She was absolutely right. How do you know anything until you have been able to feel it?
So this is may seem obvious question, but how does that make you a better storyteller and a better photographer?
It's because it makes you a better human. Photography, again, is not the importance. Photography is just the one of the flows of that flows through you, through this, again, the instrument, soup spoon, soup pot, camera lens. It reminds you and gives returns you back to the essence of all of us, And that is that we're just a person, just a human, temporary as can be. Again, you and I woke up today. One day we won't, and that's perfectly fine. You and I all become topsoil. And when you are in that state of awareness, then the act of giving and creating through these various things, in this case, we're going to talk about photography again, is an expression through that instrument. So again, it's about removing yourself.
Completely switching gears here. No segue at all. You always travel with your own coffee. At least that's what I've been told.
Yes.
As a coffee lover myself, I'd love to know, A, why, B, what type of coffee do you prefer to travel with? And then C, what is your coffee travel setup?
Ah, okay. Well, it used to be, and it's changing, thankfully. Coffee, sort of like there's a coffee cartel. I don't want to call it a coffee mafia, but people control the flow of beans on our planet, A-grade beans, and living in Indonesia for many, many years. It wasn't until really the last 5 to maybe 10 years, but really maybe the last 5 years, that you could get seriously brilliant coffee on the island of Java or Sumatra. All the A-grade beans was for export. And Indonesians couldn't have it themselves, which was the most egregious, unbelievably demented way that, again, only our species seems to do that to each other. And it's all driven by money and power. So in living in Indonesia, you could never get really brilliant cups of coffee 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And so I would bring my own coffee. And I remember going into a coffee plantation somewhere in central Java near Mount Merapi, which the soil and why Indonesia is such a fertile land, not only for spices that connect back to the horrific time of the spice wars with nutmeg and cinnamon and clove, but why coffee, when it arrived, grew so well because of the volcanic soil. At this plantation, they had a literally like a vault, like going to a bank, with a big heavy metal door where they kept the A-grade coffee. And the manager of the place said, "Would you like some of the coffee that we export?" And I said, "Well, sure, I'll try it. Thank you." And it was completely different, but no local people could have it, which is just horrific. And the only time you could get it is when it was exported out of the country and brought back into the country. I mean, what other species does this to each other? Anyways,
Colombia's the same way.
Yeah, all over the world. And that thankfully is changing by more people roasting their own coffee, partnering with local farmers. And I guess at this point now, I still bring my own coffee because I'm in often difficult places to find a cup of coffee. In India, I just fall for chai, because it's so delicious. I do have a love for coffee. I opened up had a gallery with a coffee house in it for a while. It was a beautiful time. And then I am leaving to Indonesia in a week from today. And I will bring a little over 2.5 kilos of Tandem roasters out of Maine. I'll give them a little love plug.
Please do.
A friend of mine on Instagram turned me on to Tandem, and they're a really beautiful micro lot, family run roaster out of Maine. And so it's not too far here in Massachusetts to have it shipped here. I'll travel with 2 kgs and a pour over maker, and I'll have beautiful cups of coffee starting in a week from now.
Is there anything else you consider essential for travel? Yeah, you never leave home without, aside from, the obvious things.
If there's anything to not travel without, is to travel with the least. Less is more. I anything that has to be checked into the belly of the flying tin can would seem too much. I understand in case you're needing, if you do specialized lighting, or a lot of my colleagues at the Geographic, do camera, remote cameras and stuff like that. So they carry a lot of luggage. Maybe if there's any giving to share, and it's nothing that special, but lots of underwear.
Coffee, check. Underwear, check. Taking notes.
Never go without, at least a week to 10 days of underwear. Almost the same for socks. You can kind of get away with maybe a pair of socks twice in a row. But otherwise, super minimal, two pairs of pants, three shirts, and all of that can fit almost into a backpack. Otherwise, no.
Travel hacks, coffee, underwear, and socks.
Yeah, lots of underwear. I was just in LA for the Nat Geo Summit and was there for 6 days, and I brought seven pairs of underwear. And also the benefit of it, I know this is, this is actually probably the most important stuff of photography here and life, is I just don't want to do laundry. I don't want to think about it. All I want to do is exist, and I just want to create, and mm-hmm. I just want to flow and move and not be encumbered by thought on basic things that are so simple to function in that they become entangled if it becomes the must thing I have to bring on every assignment or trip or whatever. You find your way of moving, and it's different for everyone. There isn't one special thing I bring. I mean, I bring a book, maybe two books. No, I guess I'm pretty boring when it comes to that kind of a thing.
You're not a boring man. Folks at home, John's photography can be found on his website, stanmeyer.com. That's STANMEYER, stanmeyer.com. And we've talked about Instagram. He is on Instagram at John Stanmeyer. Anything else you'd like to add, John?
No, I can't think of anything. If I fulfilled what you were seeking, then I'm very thankful. Thank you for what you're doing and your beautiful photography as well. And I look forward to listening to more. I heard Amy's piece, which I thought was Amy Vitale, which she's so giving, amazing. So kind. Yeah. I just saw her last week, and it's just always a radiant energy to be around Amy. Thank you for what you're doing, and keep giving.
Don't be a stranger. Take care.
Likewise. You be well.
You've been listening to Beyond the Lens with me, Richard Burnaby. Thanks to John Stanmeyer for taking the time to join me in this interesting and entertaining conversation. And thanks to you, of course, for listening. You can tweet me at Burnaby Photo with any comments or feedback. And if you enjoyed the show, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It means a lot. Or a rating on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'd love to hear what you think about the show and what you'd like to see from Beyond the Lens in the future. You can sign up to receive an email when a new episode drops at our website, beyondthelens.fm. Here's to truth, adventure, and passion. See you next time.